This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The Trump administration is enforcing a zero-tolerance policy for anyone crossing the border illegally, and this has led to a growing number of unaccompanied minors being held in detention. And the news broke this weekend that the Department of Health and Human Services is scouting locations at military bases in Texas that would house up to 5,000 migrant children. Franco Ordonez is reporting that story. He is White House correspondent with the McClatchy Newspaper's Washington Bureau, and he joins us now. Franco, welcome to the State of Things.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tell me more about these tent cities. Where would they be?
So essentially, they would be spread across Texas at a few different military bases. Fort Bliss, which is a sprawling Army base in El Paso. Also, there's at the Dyes Air Force Base in Abilene, the Goodfellow Air Force Base in San Angelo. But that doesn't mean that there may not be more being discussed. These are just the ones that that HHS did confirm with me.
All right,
these are places that they're looking to potentially build these tent cities.
When we say building a tent city, what are we talking about? What are the plans, to the extent that you know what these things might actually look like?
Yeah, they're definitely still in the early stages, according to HHS. What we've seen in the past, and these have been built before under the Obama administration, there was a site, for example, in Florida at Homestead Air Force Base, where there was this large, sprawling white city of white tents. Where children were brought in, filled with beds. Obviously, they were given food, given clothing. They had like some recreational facilities, soccer courts. Some reports that they had like exercise classes. So you would expect that this could be a very similar type scenario in the Texas facilities. That said, you know, you can imagine in El Paso, I mean, that's desert-like conditions, well over 100-degree weather, to having up to 5,000 children there. That's, you know, that raises some eyebrows.
Yeah, it does. And let's talk about who we're talking about here. These are unaccompanied children. So talk about that situation. Who are these children?
So these are the kids that come to the border without their parents, not the children who come with their parents and separated, though that is a very significant point. These are the kids who come without their parents. They're brought, they usually turn themselves into federal authorities, Border Patrol, ask for asylum. Border Patrol takes them, turns them over to the Office of Refugee Rights and Resettlement, which is under HHS. HHS then decides whether they will be able to turn them over to family members in the United States or move them to a shelter, a detention center. So looking forward, this could be a place where many of these kids go, is these tent cities. And the number of kids who have been coming has been increasing in recent months. We've gotten a new surge that is very much like the surge that we saw back in 2014 when there was a flood of Central Americans, children and families who are rushing to the United States looking to escape poverty and extreme violence in those nations.
Give us a sense of what the numbers are. Do we have any idea?
Yeah, we have. Right now we have over 11,200 children who are in shelters who are without their parents. So they're without their guardians. And what has happened because of that, these facilities have almost completely filled up. There's about 100 facilities for children in 17 states, and they are at 95% capacity. So they desperately need need space for if they're going to continue to detain children. And that's where the separation part is so key. Because of the separation of parents and children, they have really filled up the capacity. So they need new places to move kids. And right now they're looking at these tent cities for the unaccompanied kids.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that. It's a separate issue, but as you say now, very closely entwined. This administration has begun to separate children from families. Talk about that policy and what else that has meant.
It's a tremendous change. I mean, you know, let's be real. The Obama administration was very strong on enforcement. Not so many people understand that, but the Obama administration, they created facilities like this on military bases. They detained parents and children together. There was a time where parents and young children were in jail-like facilities for over a year. But where the Obama administration stopped short and the Trump administration has stepped over the line is in the point of separating parents and children. Just yesterday, Jay Johnson was giving interviews. He was the former Department of Homeland Security secretary. He was saying he could not separate the parents and children. Well, that's what's happening now, and that is what is really causing a lot of concern throughout the nation about whether this is the right thing to do and whether this fits in with American goals. The Trump administration wants to send a very strong point that if you come to the United States and if you come across the border illegally, you will be prosecuted. And if that means we have to separate the child so that we can prosecute the parent, we will do so. It's a very strong message.
And to put a further point on your earlier point, the Obama administration, of course, Barack Obama had deported far more undocumented immigrants than even his predecessor, George Bush. So tough on immigration was something that was key and I think characteristic of the Obama administration. But you're saying we've gone to another level. And again, now the question, what happens in the desert in these tent cities when you have children? What age range are we talking about?
We're talking roughly at this point in past, it's been oftentimes like 12 to 13 years old up to 17.
All right. And
kind of the age ring.
And so the Department of Health and Human Services is doing all this. They're responsible for this. What kind of responsibility do they have for the care of these children once they're in these cities? How does that work? Are they refugee agencies or who takes care of the kids?
Yeah, I mean it's a great question. It is the HHS and the Office of Refugee Resettlement that is responsible and liable for the care of all these children. They are responsible for all the 11,000 children that are currently held without a parent or guardian. So whatever happens to these kids, it's on them, and it's a big deal because there's a lot of contracts that are being are potentially out there where private organizations are could be putting bids out to make money. You have to think about in a facility where as many as 5,000 kids are going to be staying, there's health care costs that you got to take care of. There is food service costs that you have to take care of. There is guards that need to be hired. So this is a very significant factor. If it is anything like the child shelters that are currently going on and the family detention centers, the Obama family detention centers, you can expect some reports of allegations of challenges. I mean, just even now, even this month, the Texas state facilities reported that there was over 150 allegations against allegations of problems at some of these child shelters in Texas, including sexual assault. So these are some serious considerations to take into account.
And have we, I mean, obviously the Department of Health and Human Services is in the process now of doing this planning. Any proposed budgets? Any idea what all this is going to cost?
Not at this point, but I can tell you it is a budget buster. I mean, it is extremely expensive to detain a parent and child. If you detain children, parents and children together, it has cost about $200 a day. Separating them, you're talking about $150 to $180 apart. But really, since in the past they haven't held the children for very long, there's also obviously you could put monitoring bracelets on the children and the parents. It's not ideal, but it's, you know, just simply from an economic standpoint, you're talking $17, $15 to $17 a day. So there are certainly other methods. No matter, regardless of the method you use, it's going to cause controversy. But certainly detaining the kids, separating from their parents, and just putting kids in detention facilities, you can imagine the potential mental stress on these kids. Is a big deal.
You talked about another surge. Do we know what's behind this now? Why now and why so many again?
There are different reports and there are different kind of research about what those are. Some feel that the problems in Central America have, you know, not gotten better, that they continue to be bad and worsening. There is feelings that while for the first year there was a lot of concern about the Trump administration's strong deterrent strategy, the strong rhetoric from President Trump himself about prosecuting individuals. But after a year's time, traffickers as well as the immigrants themselves learn that there are still limitations to what the administration can do. Their laws are the laws. And they just educated themselves. And the feeling is that they're learning that if they come to the border and they still ask for asylum, they still will get the right to have a court hearing. So they still can get a credible fear hearing. And the feeling is that that awareness has created this new wave.
And, of course, there's a huge backlog of immigration cases in the court right now.
It's a massive backlog in the court cases. It's a big issue that's, you know, been going on for years. It takes 3, 4, sometimes 5 years to sometimes get some of these asylum cases. The concern that the Trump administration has, and so did the Obama administration, is that when an asylum case is scheduled, it's not for 5 years. You have to release the parent, and they may or may not show up for court. And they say, the administration says, that oftentimes they don't.
Franco Ordonez is a White House correspondent for the McClatchy Newspaper's Washington Bureau. Franco, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Just ahead, Islamic poets saw love in broad terms. We'll talk with Muslim scholar Umid Safi about how we can get a little more love into our lives by listening to the mystical medieval Islamic poets. We'll talk about that on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.